Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We're about two-thirds of the way through Genesis chapter 29, the famous narrative about Jacob's marriage to Rachel, which turned out to be, by Laban's deception, first to Leah. Laban had tricked Jacob, one crafty man giving the other a dose of his own medicine. He had explained to Jacob when Jacob wanted to know when he woke up after marrying Leah and discovering it was not Rachel, wanting to know what the tarnation was going on. And Laban explained to him, calmly but coldly, that it was not the custom in their world to marry off the younger before the older. He knew Jacob's great love for Rachel, and so he told him, "Now if you want the younger, you need to stay with me another 7 years, and you can have both." Verse 27, "Complete the bridal week of this one named Leah, and we'll give you the other also for the service, which you shall serve with me for another 7 years." God is here chastening and disciplining Jacob, making him a little sick of his own habits as he sees them reflected in the mirror of his uncle Laban. So Jacob agrees to the deal. All Jacob's chickens are coming home to roost in the disciplinary work of God, as God is shaping a man for his own purposes. Jacob just shows what a person will do for the sake of love, which is as it ought to be. Unfortunately, fewer and fewer men than we think appear to enter into marriage with that same degree of self-sacrificing love. And if they did, there would be many, many more happy and fulfilling marriages. For women aspire to be loved like that by a real man, and Jacob was, for all of his faults, just that, a real man. His love for Rachel at least mirrors the love of Christ for his people. As in the case of Leah, we see in verse 29 that Laban gave as a bonus to Rachel his servant Bilhah, a female, as her attendant. Both Zilpah and Bilhah are mentioned because they will play major roles in building Jacob's family as concubines with their children. In verse 30, however, we see a glimmer of the ugly side of polygamy. We read, "So Jacob went in to Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years." Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he graciously opened her womb. But Rachel was barren, and Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben. For she said, names had meaning, "Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me." We'll get into this shortly. Then she conceived again and bore a son, and she said, "Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also." She named him Simeon. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I've borne him three sons." Therefore he was named Levi. And she conceived again, one after another, bang, bang, bang. And she bore a son and said, "This time I will praise the Lord." Therefore she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Let's go back to this ugly side of polygamy. In such a marital arrangement, it's impossible, for one thing, for any man to love multiple wives equally and to give them all the attention each deserves. Jacob married Rachel out of sheer love. Leah he married by Laban's deception. Now all three were stuck. Leah got the raw end of the deal emotionally. For we read of Jacob, his love for Rachel was greater than his love for Leah. Actually, it does not say that he hated Leah or he didn't love her at all. It just says that his love for Rachel was greater. He preferred her to Leah. And right there, folks, is the source of the fractiousness and the natural jealousy that would plague the family of Jacob. Polygamy was never part of God's original plan. It was an institution, if you call it that. It was an accommodation that fallen men superimposed on the institution of marriage. In time, it got deeply entrenched in ancient custom. And with it came all kinds of deconstructive effects on domestic life. God tolerated it as a matter of divine accommodation. It was never a matter of divine approbation. Listen, any time we veer from God's plans to human plans, we impose on ourselves and on our cultures much self-inflicted damage. And we're seeing that all over the face of our contemporary culture. Then social pundits spin their wheels trying to figure out what is wrong. How do we fix it? And only rarely do they come up with the right answers. Well, in verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, Jacob embraced her, but compared to Rachel, she was unloved. God enabled Leah to conceive, but Rachel remained childless. Now, how do you explain that? It's really rather simple. As we go through the Bible, we see that God is the God of the underdog. Not indiscriminately, mind you. A lot of people don't get that. The underdog, the widow, the orphaned, even the oppressed, can be and often are godless and as mean as mad dogs. However, our God, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, is a compassionate God. He's one who takes note of injustice. He's a God who takes note of innocent people getting stepped on and pushed to the end of the line. He cares about their plights. Jacob, for his part, could not help the fact that he did not emotionally love Leah as he did Rachel. He could not push a button or pull a string and say, let's be equal here. He had not bargained for her as his wife. I think in time he learned to care for her, but she was forced on him by deception. On the other hand, Leah, under the authority of her father in that culture, Leah could not help the fact that she was pushed onto Jacob. And having been pushed onto him, she longed, as any normal woman would have in that situation, she asked no more than just to be loved by him. So it hurt her and cut her deeply when she was slighted, and she had to play the second fiddle in Jacob's household. God saw her plight. Leah belonged to Jacob, and she was now part of the elect lineage, and God was going to protect Leah and to provide for her and to balance things up a little better. Folks, God has a way of leveling his servants when they have too much of a good thing. God has a way of leveling his servants when their riches might seem to spoil them. He has a way of balancing their prosperity with enough pain to keep them grounded and dependent upon him. And so it was with Rachel. Rachel had a surfeit. She had an abundance of Jacob's attention, his loving care. But God balanced that. Her womb was barren, and that greatly humbled her vis-a-vis Leah, who was quite fertile. So in verse 32, we read that Leah became pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. She gave him a special name. She said, "It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely," she hoped, "my husband will love me now." The Hebrew word for Reuben, by sound, evokes the thought of, "He has seen my misery." Hence, she chose that name for her first son. In verse 33, when she conceives again and gave birth to a son, she named him Simeon. The meaning of the name is "he who hears." She named him Simeon because, she said, "the Lord heard that I'm not loved and gave me this one too." In verse 34, she bears a son, the third of Jacob's sons, Levi. It's a Hebrew word which sounds like and could possibly be derived from the Hebrew for attached. So when she named him, she reasoned, "At last my husband will become attached to me." And so, in hopefulness, she named him Levi. The fourth time Leah conceives a son, she named him Judah, which means praise. And then she stopped having children. Now a little background here. Bearing children in those days was hoped for and expected of wives, a lot more so than it may be in our culture today, which aborts and savagely murders more children than the people Hitler ever exterminated. It was especially hoped in those days, and given the conditions of life and the pastoral and agrarian economy of that day, that they would deliver sons who could help around on the farm and in the pasture, so to speak. That expectation was so strong in those Near Eastern cultures that for a wife to fail to deliver on that score was a source of shame and acute embarrassment. In Israel, failure to produce children was taken as a sign of divine discredit, and thus it was a heavy emotional burden when a woman could not produce a child for her husband. To be so fertile as Leah, she would naturally think, especially over against Rachel, who was barren, that her fertility would be meritly enhancing in the eyes of Jacob. But she continued to be disappointed in the failure of her fertility to produce the effect that she hoped for. Jacob's affections for Rachel were so great that it made Leah, by comparison, feel unloved. This brings us now to chapter 30. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel became jealous of her sister. She said to Jacob, "Give me children or I'm going to die." Well, Jacob's anger burned against Rachel. He was ticked off, and he said to her, "Am I in the place of God, who's withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Well, this again brings into the foreground the perils of polygamy. I said earlier that polygamy was never the divine plan. Polygamy was a custom imposed upon the original institution by sinful man. In this instance, Jacob was duped into his particular domestic arrangement by his uncle Laban. It was not Jacob's choice. It was Laban's deception. Even so, we see now the bad things that can happen in a home when God's plan is not followed. That has not changed from generation to generation. In the world of marriage, polygamy or not, people have always had trouble conforming to God's marital blueprint. And what usually comes out of that is confusion and even domestic chaos. But we never seem to learn. Beautiful Rachel, the apple of her husband's eye, is, like most any woman in that age and culture, humiliated by the fact that so far she has been unable to bear Jacob children, while Leah has produced not one, but four boys to boot for Jacob. Now we have jealousy peeking its ugly head and the toxic air of a sister rivalry as the two of them compete. When emotion takes over human relationships, calm, cool reason gets booted out the door. The blame game causes us to misdirect our fire at the wrong targets, and that expands the scope of the damage. In this instance, Rachel shifted the blame for her infertility to Jacob, and she said to Jacob, "Give me children or I'm going to die." Granted, it was a big issue culturally speaking, therefore psychologically speaking also. But Rachel had blown everything out of all proportion. It wasn't the end of the world after all, though for her it was disgrace, verse 23 to be sure. But her jealousy was exaggerating the real importance of her not having a child to present to her husband. It's a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. It's a blessing of God. But, as I say, there are far worse things. This was not God punishing Rachel. This was God's mysterious plan in her case. But Jacob did not see it that way, like Rachel did, and was not all wrought up about it. Well, that should have enabled Rachel not to elevate her infertility to a life or death issue. Rachel needed to get grounded. Rachel needed to recover perspective. And there, folks, is a good lesson for us all. A lesson to step back and measure our problems in realistic terms. The death of a dream or an ambition does not have to be the death of us, or the death of a marriage, or the death of a relationship with others in the family. Disappointing, yes, but it was not necessarily a total disaster when we consider that those things are in God's hands. May I say that again, and when I repeat things, please don't misunderstand me to think I'm voicing some profundity. It's just simple things that we forget. Some things like this, like Rachel's inability to bear children, and she wasn't the only one, you recall. We remember Hannah, don't we? Those things then, and even now, though, the culture pressure is not the same today, but there's emotional pressure, and those things can be very disappointing. But when we consider that those things are in God's hands, and when we know, and we should be able to know, that it's not due to any divine punishment or displeasure or disfavor, then it should take some of the pressure off. Well, when Rachel took her frustration out on Jacob, who in no way was to blame, Jacob was teed off by Rachel's going off on him, as if somehow he, Jacob, was responsible for her so far infertility. And Jacob let her know it. Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children? Of course not. But you see, emotion, not tempered with rationality, often blisters the innocent. And that kind of outburst can, and often does, damage or even torch important relationships. We're all emotional people, not to the same degree. Some of us are very passionate people. But we've got to watch to put a bridle on those emotions, because emotion is not a good friend of reason normally. Though neither gender is immune to irrational emotional outburst, I think, you may or may not agree, it is fair to say that the average woman operates more on this frequency than the average man. Men have their own male-like vices. So let Rachel be a negative example for all. Fortunately, in this case, Jacob's love for Rachel survived this dust-up and this unfair blaming of him for her inability to produce a child. Rachel's outburst here reminds us of another dynamic when we get all worked up, get all bent out of shape in our human problems. Jacob nailed it. Her inability to produce children to this point was attributable to the sovereignty of God. So when Rachel was looking for someone to blame, what she didn't realize, and what we often don't realize, is that she's really mad at God. I've discovered that in myself about a lot of things during my lifetime, and a lot of things in my role as a pastor. And we're always looking around for something or someone or circumstances of this or that to blame. The last place we look at is at ourselves. Well, Rachel had nothing to look at there. There was nothing in herself. But really, our protest is against God. We're mad at Him. He's a sovereign God. Ultimately, He's in control. And when we get right down to it, we must realize when we go off like this, that is precisely the one we're rebelling at. When we can't accept the way things are breaking for us. Over the years, reminding myself of that truth has helped me simmer down some. It's helped me do what in earlier years was very hard, to settle for what is, rather than go off and blast other things or circumstances or people for things not being or going the way I want them to. I don't mean that there are never other people or other circumstances that don't contribute to our pain and our hurt, but ultimately it goes back to the Lord. Well, Rachel had a solution for her dilemma, just as Sarah proposed to Abraham when she had no child. And it was very much according to the customs of the time in such circumstances. Her servant Bilhah, remember her? She would give her into the arms of Jacob. This would allow Bilhah to become a surrogate mother. That would effectively make Bilhah his concubine. Sleep with her so she can bear children for me, and I too can build up a family through her. Now again, folks, this arrangement was man's way. This was not in God's original blueprint. But an entrenched custom in human society at this point, it was. And God worked His will through it, but not because of it. And He did not shield the family and does not shield any other from the liabilities inherent in it. He never does when we in our customs or in our preferences go off the reservation, so to speak. So the alternative was executed. Bilhah was given to Jacob as his wife, his concubine, and as she hoped, she conceived, she bore a son for Rachel, whom Rachel called Dan. The meaning of the name is, He has vindicated. She put that name on him because she felt God had heard her and vindicated her, because she felt that there was something ill attached to the fact that she had not yet had a child. So now Rachel, relieved, saw a way to build a family through her servant, Bilhah. Now, as a modern 20th century person, I've never quite figured how that worked emotionally, but apparently it did. So in verse 7, Bilhah again conceives. Plan is working, she keeps it going, gives birth to a fifth son of Jacob, this one named Naphtali. It means my struggle. This naming broadcasts Rachel's unseemly rivalry with her sister, Leah. It was basically a taunt name, for she says in attaching it, this is not to her credit, I've had a great struggle with my sister, and I have won. From this jealous rivalry of sisters is planted the seeds of a bitter rivalry among the children that will be projected for generations among the tribes. We see it tragically in the case of Joseph and his brothers. Nothing good comes out of family jealousy and rivalry. It is first divisive, and then it is just flat out destructive. Let us take note and let us be warned. This is timeless. Well, thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.